This is the Unconquered Podcast. Unbiased, unrivaled, and unconquered coverage and analysis of Florida State football.
If Florida State,
we won national championships and ACC championships.
It's caught! Touchdown official, Kelvin Benjamin!
Back to some basics, consistency in what we're doing. Guys getting a little banged and bruised, working a bunch of different situations, making progress.
You have to have success so you know something I can really do this.
Game over! Those are the champions of college football!
Jameis, why? Jameis, no! No! No!
This is the Unconquered Podcast. I'm your host, Jason Staples. Today on the podcast, we're going to talk about potential changes on the offensive line. We're going to evaluate a little bit of what happened in the Clemson game, and we're going to wrap up the Jameis Winston discussion from last week. So let's get started. Okay, I am joined again by Wayne McGahey, our boots on the ground, as they say. Someone was complaining about that the other day on Twitter.
I love that phrase.
Yeah, there's somebody was complaining about that phrase on Twitter, but you know, it's got its usefulness, and so we're going to go ahead and use it. But Wayne, good to have you back with us. We're going to talk a little bit about the Clemson game, a little bit more on what we've talked about so far. But we'll also talk a little bit about what you saw in practice today, and sort of what that may indicate. Also, some of the things that Jimbo Fisher talked about in his lengthy 40-minute press conference today. First things first, you know, it was pretty evident that Florida State's offensive line is not where they hoped it would be at this point in the season. Fisher was clear about that they obviously are aware of that. And, you know, there's only been one change personnel-wise from last year, and that's replacing Brian Stork with center Austin Barron. And Barron is sort of, now that Cason Beatty's sort of off the snide after this game, Barron has sort of become the new whipping boy this week. And Fisher was asked specifically about how Barron was playing and whether, you know, that was really the source of the problems for this Florida State offensive line. And so Fisher commented on that, and then also you saw some things at practice today. So why don't you fill us in on what you heard and what you saw today, and then we'll chat a little bit about what that may mean.
Well, in practice today, we had Cam Irving working as the first team center with Bobby Hart, who's normally the right tackle, playing left, and then JUCO transfer Chad Mavetti starting at right tackle. The interesting thing was that normally when this happens, you know, because it has happened a couple during practice before, Barron's always taking the reps with the second team. Well, Barron wasn't taking any reps at all today. Ryan Hofield was taking all the reps there.
Now, just to be clear, this is during the drills, during the walkthrough part of practice, the part that we're allowed to see. As opposed to what's actually happening in practice. So, you know, we can't be sure exactly what's going on beyond that, but that's still noteworthy.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, because we've been able to see this before, and it's always been Barron. You know, when Cam's working there, Barron's working with the second team, but Barron was just standing there for most of the time this today.
Yeah, and, you know, that's something that, you know, Fisher was asked about this, and he was sort of noncommittal. You know, he was asked about the play of Austin Barron, and he said, well, you know, Austin's played well. Has he played great? No, but nobody up there has. And one of the things he was talking about is that how the offensive line is sort of lacking in their timing, they've not been working very well as a cohesive group. And you know, that in a lot of ways does trace back to the center who, you know, is the sort of cornerstone of a good line. So, you know, even though he did say, well, you know, he's played well, but he hasn't played great, I think that said volumes in terms of the way that they're thinking right now.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he was actually unprompted in the press conference when he started mentioning Barron, like at the very beginning before he was asked about Barron later. But he was unprompted when he started talking about him the first time. So you know it's on the forefront of his mind because, let's be honest, he played awful against Clemson.
Yeah, I mean, we expected him to have problems with Jarrett, but – and you're going to – go ahead. Finish what you're going to say.
We expected him to have problems with Jarrett. There's not that many centers in the country that could go 1v1 with Grady Jarrett. It's just who he is. I mean, he's one of the best defensive tackles. Where the problem comes in is that he wasn't making the right reads. He was letting Stephon Anthony eat his lunch all day long. I mean, Anthony dominated him.
Yeah, and that, you know, that was something that I noticed in this game. You know, I in the previous two games, he hadn't played especially well. But, you know, as I'd said before, he hadn't played a whole lot worse than anybody else. And in some cases, I felt like Matias had played worse in spots. Cam Irving has had his spots where he's not played well, and that carried over to this game. We'll talk about that in a moment. But in this one, Austin Barron really did have, he had a rough game. He didn't play well. Like you said, he got beat by Jarrett quite a bit. Anytime he was one-on-one with Jarrett, Jarrett beat him. But the real concerning thing is when he got to the second level, he was a non-factor. Stephon Anthony ran right by him, and their linebackers, basically dominated him as well. And that's a serious problem in this offense. You have to be able to get to the second level, and you have to be able to, you know, get a hat on a linebacker who's responsible for a gap, or you're just never going to be able to. You're going to get backs hit in the backfield quite a bit, which is what happened in this game. So. And that's not to say, again, Fisher emphasized that this is not a single person issue. You know, the whole offensive line has struggled more than anybody expected coming into this year. But there has been a weakness at center, and that was demonstrated in spades in this particular game. One thing also that I thought was interesting is, again, this is the move that they would make here involves moving Cam Irving to center, the left tackle to center. And one of the problems there is that you're moving your elite left tackle, you know, a guy who's been put in, you know, a potential first rounder. He's in a lot of mock first rounds at this point at the left tackle spot, moving him over to center. And I talked to Fisher actually this summer about whether Irving could really play center, whether they were, you know, experimenting or whatever. And he assured me, he said, no, that guy can really play. I mean, he's good. He's a good center. I mean, he can, because he's so athletic and he's so strong and he moves so well, he's in the kind of scheme that they run at center, on this offensive line, the thing that he offers is a guy that can get the angles that you want in the running game and is never going to get overpowered. And he's got great balance, so he's such a good athlete. And then, of course, the real question is, well, you know, how well does he snap the ball? That's the part that people don't understand, and we saw how important that was in this game with Clemson, their backup center, missing a snap, you know, snapping it over the head of Deshaun Watson and costing them a touchdown down on the goal line. Now, that was caused, as Fisher addressed and as we had mentioned in our post-game review of this game, that was largely caused because Eddie Goldman just destroyed that kid on the prior play. And so, you know, he was jittery. He was in a place where he's trying to snap and get his hands up and make the reach block early on that next play before Goldman could actually do what he did again, and he snapped it over Deshaun Watson's head. But that's the thing that happens when you're not used to snapping it. It's one thing. It's difficult enough to block a guy like Grady Jarrett, to block, you know, these elite defensive tackles. It's much more difficult to do that after snapping the ball and snapping it accurately, especially in the shotgun. So, you know, you have to snap it. You're already a beat behind because they're going on your snap, and then you have to actually work. That's you've got to be a great athlete to really be successful at center. You've got to be able to hold your ground against these guys despite them having an edge on you because you're the one snapping the ball. So the real question is, you know, you've got a kid in Austin Barron who's been snapping the ball for a long time. I mean, he was a center in high school. He's accustomed to snapping the football. You move a guy like Cam Irving over, and he's never done it in a game. So that's the concern. And then the other concern is, well, Cam Irving is your stud left tackle. Do you want to have that drop off at left tackle that you're going to get when you move your stud left tackle inside to center, and you may, you know, not get necessarily that much better there because he may have some problems at the snap, and you're getting worse at the left tackle spot. But the interesting thing is that in this game, and actually in a couple other spots, you know, in the Oklahoma State game, Cam Irving didn't play well. Cam Irving last year dominated Vic Beasley in that game against Clemson at Clemson. This year, Vic Beasley won that matchup, and he won it pretty handily. He ran right by him on a couple cases, and Irving has had some trouble on the edge a few times. So now, you know, the question is, how much are you really losing by moving a guy like Bobby Hart to left tackle and then putting Chad Mavity at that right tackle spot? At that point, actually Cam Irving's struggles at left tackle early in the season may make it easier to move him to center to replace a struggling Austin Barron as well. So that's something I think a lot of people may not have thought about so far, but that explains, you know, why you might want to try that a little bit more.
I mean, absolutely. It was really, really disappointing to watch Cam against Vic Beasley on Saturday night. He absolutely dominated that matchup, you know, the prior year. And, you know, to see him, Matias actually had to help Irving on multiple situations, which left Barron one-on-one with Grady Jarrett, which should never, ever happen. So he had to play help. Matias had the choice of playing help against Beasley or help against Jarrett when both Irving and Barron are getting beat.
Right. And in the pregame, you're expecting at least Irving to be able to handle his business there so that you can give some help to Austin Barron. And that really didn't happen the way that you would hope. And that collapses the pocket a little quicker. Now, McGuire didn't make things easy by holding onto the football a little longer. You know, he didn't trust his reads at different points where he could have gotten rid of the football earlier and made it a little easier on the offensive line. But that's part of what you expect with a young quarterback. And so as an offensive line, you have to hold up all the more. And so that was, you know, it was really disappointing to see from the Florida State perspective to see Irving really not hold up the way that he did last year. And I felt like, again, he and actually a couple of the Florida State, you know, really across the board, aside from Barron, who's a little bit light in the butt, you can make a case that the Florida State offensive line right now is just a little bit overweight. They're not moving as well as they did last year, and I think that they may be just a tad overweight across the board. Although I think Matias is still pretty trim, and Bobby Hart has actually played really well so far. When I've had my eye on him, when I've broken stuff down, Hart's actually played well, and I thought he played one of the better games on Saturday. Which, again, makes you more comfortable about moving him to the left side. And Mavity, of course, is a terrific athlete, and you can put him on the right and feel pretty comfortable. And I think what they're really trying to do is figure out who their best five are at this point. And, of course, you've got 3 weeks right now before Notre Dame comes to town where you can start, you know, mixing and matching a little bit in these games and maybe not worrying quite as much.
Yeah, if Florida State's going to make these changes, I would prefer them to make them now when you have multiple weeks to get into the groove, like game time situations. Cam's never, Cam's never played a snap of center in an actual football game. So getting him out there and getting him acquainted to that and getting Mavetti into the game, it would be a big deal.
Yeah, and I think, you know, basically the way that I would approach it is I would still probably start Austin Barron. Although I'm not sure about that. I mean, I don't know what his actual grade was in this game, but I have a hard time thinking it was over, say, 60, which is not what you want. I mean, generally speaking, over 85 or so, you're playing on an ACC championship or, you know, potentially national championship level, and you know you can sort of work down from there. You know, you've got to get better production than that. Now, it depends on how comfortable they really are, But, you know, my guess is that you probably start this game against NC State with your usual five, and then if you are able to jump out to, say, a 2 or 3 score lead while the while the first team offense is still going to be playing, that's when you make the switch, and you determine at that point whether or not that's going to work a little bit based on how that goes once you've introduced that into the rotation. And then if it works well, if you're comfortable with it, then you maybe start that way against Wake Forest. I mean, NC State, because of Jacoby Brissett, they have the possibility, you know, they've got a reasonable chance of, you know, giving Florida State a little bit of a scare if they play great. Now, do I think that Florida State's going to go up there and have trouble? I don't think Florida State's going to have the Raleigh curse this year, especially since Winston is back, and I think he's going to be out for blood after being suspended this last week. And the way that the defense began to click in that second half, we may have actually watched Florida State turn the corner on the season in that second half. So I think they probably feel comfortable going into the NC State game, but because they're not a truly low level team. I mean, they are 4-0, even though they played one of the easiest schedules in the country. They do have a quarterback who can get hot and can hurt you, so you can't exactly play that as a true cupcake until you're up a little bit. And then if you get up, you know, you go up 14, 17, 21 points, now you can start to mix and match and experiment. But the next week against Wake Forest is a name your score game. Wake Forest is among the worst, if they're not the worst Power 5 conference team in the country right now, they're really close. And I haven't seen a team in the Power 5 conferences that is worse than them at this point. So that gives you a chance to potentially run that, you know, with the ones the whole game, because you have no concern about losing that game. And then you have Syracuse at Syracuse, which gives you an opportunity to try it out one more time against a little bit better defense, and in a hostile environment on the road. The Carrier Dome can get loud, so now you're getting to, you know, move things around, and you're able to sort of work your way in to the Notre Dame game when you'd really target having all that together. So I think that would be the way to do this. Like you said, now would be the time to make the change. I'm not sure you could make that change going into the opener against Oklahoma State. And I don't think that, you know, you feel comfortable making that change in, you know, going into the Clemson game either. But now, you know, you might actually feel like you've got you could treat these a little bit more like preseason than you could actually the earlier games. So that's what makes me wonder. I was surprised not to see some of that mixing and matching against the Citadel, but I do think we'll see some of that here, and it'll be interesting to see how that transpires, how that works out. I do think Cam Irving could really make his draft stock go up even more by showing he can play center at the level that Fisher says he can.
Yeah, because it went down a lot after this past weekend, because what made it go up so high was the way he handled the speed rush of Vic Beasley last year. So him regressing really probably cost him a lot of money. So he needs to show that he can play at that high level in order, if he wants to get back up there.
Yeah, and in fairness to Irving, one of the sacks he gave up was a miscommunication where Nick O'Leary was in a wingback position, and it was pretty clear that Irving was expecting support from O'Leary on the outside, and he didn't take a really deep pass set. And so, but because Clemson blitzed from the C-gap, O'Leary recognized that and actually took the C-gap blitzer, which, from what I saw, Irving initially was going to step to the C-gap blitzer. Then he realized that O'Leary wasn't outside him, and he tried and tried to get his hands on Beasley, but it was too late at that point. So that's not one where he really got beat. That's one where you have the kind of miscommunication you shouldn't have when you've got seniors out there. And there were a few of those. But there was another example where Beasley just flat beat him on the outside because he didn't set his pass set. He didn't get into his pass set deep enough. And there were some times where Beasley was able to, you know, spin to the inside and do some of the secondary rush moves that you could see Beasley really improved himself over the offseason. And it wasn't clear that Cam Irving did improve over the offseason with that, you know, between what he was able to do last year and this, and Beasley did jump ahead and he did cause problems coming to the inside, you know, required some help from Matias at different points. But I do want to say in fairness that he didn't just get his butt kicked. There were times where he held his own. He did his thing, but it was not what he did last year by any stretch.
No, and I also think that it had a little bit to do with the play calling. I think that Jimbo needed to go to the 3 and 5 step drop sooner because, you know, Beasley's coming around on the corner and there's McGuire because he's 7 step drop. So he's right there, you know, but
they're mostly deep fives, but yeah, they did take deeper drops, you know, early on. They tried to go play action, tried to hit some things down the field. And honestly, when you go back and you look at the film, and Fisher pointed this out too, when you go back and look at the film, Florida State had receivers running free, just wide open downfield that, you know, you would hope that that McGuire would feel comfortable just letting it loose. Fisher said that there was one particular play where, you know, McGuire went after O'Leary on the outside, and you had a post alert to Rashad Greene, where Rashad Greene, Fisher said, was open by, he was 10 yards behind anybody else. And he said, basically, if McGuire had missed the throw by 5 yards, it still would have scored because Greene could have fair caught it. And you know, that's what Fisher was trying to do early in the game. And when they went in at the half, I think they just determined the game was just moving so fast for McGuire that they just wanted to slow things down as much as they could and give him some throws that he could make for sure. And they did just enough of that. I think you're right that they could have done that earlier and maybe progressed a little bit to some of those other things, some of those deeper throws later. But, you know, hindsight's 20/20. And I do think you're right that made it a little bit tougher on the offensive line. But the bottom line is they got their butts kicked. They got, you know, up until the fourth quarter when they really did start to impose their will a little bit. And then by the time you saw the last two runs, those runs in overtime, they did exactly what the Florida State offensive line and Carlos Williams, what we expected from them all season. And it's the first we've really seen that from that group. So among those other things that you saw, you know, in terms of the practice report today, you also saw that Niall Lawrence Stample, who apparently has a torn pectoral muscle, was not at practice. The Marios were at practice, but not really participating, and a few other things. What else should we be looking at coming into the NC State game based on the rumblings that you've seen coming in? And then we'll talk a little bit about the Winston situation and move forward from there.
Well, you know, just to start off with, you know, the situation with Winston, where it sits now. Winston was taking the first ups with the first team wide receivers in drills today. Last week on Thursday, that switched, and Sean McGuire was taking the reps with the first team wide receivers. So Winston's back in that. Justin Shanks was actually participating today, so that's you know, I thought he played fairly well against the Citadel. Granted, it's Citadel before he went out,
and a very small sample size.
Yes, very, very small. So, you know, maybe that adds depth, but NLS not being at practice is a really big blow, considering I thought that he played extremely well on Saturday.
Yeah, he really did. I thought he looked the best he's probably looked at Florida State since he's been at Florida State. So, you know, it's a big loss, but at the same point, I also thought Derek Nnadi looked good in relief, and that's the best Goldman has also ever looked in pads.
No doubt about that.
I mean, he's had top 10 talent. That game he played like a top 10 player. You know, and you also, I thought Mitchell played an extremely good game. He was not as visible. You know, he didn't make the plays that Goldman did, but he was very reliable and he forced some cutbacks. He created some pressure. So, you know, Florida State is much better off at the defensive tackle position at this point in the year, even with a Lawrence Stample injury, than I think most of us anticipated coming into the year at this point. So they're worse on the offensive line and better on the defensive line than what we expected at this point. And the good thing is we've seen that offensive group play better than they are at this point. So, you know that is within their grasp. So, you know, looking forward, that's not a bad thing. Anything else that we ought to cover before we wrap? I do know that you know, there's still some questions as to, you know, whether this Winston thing is over. I know you dug around on Saturday and have determined. I'll go ahead and let you, you know, fill in basically what you understand here.
The way that from what everything that I've gathered, you know, Winston was caught lying to the administration, who had stuck their neck out for him, and they got really pissed off about it. And, you know, that's not surprising, because they have. They've stuck out the Florida State reputation. They've stuck out their own necks, you know, for him. So they actually wanted him kicked off the team at that point.
The administration, that is. Fisher stood in the way of that. He advocated for Winston, as I understand.
Yes, and then from there, they decided to let it rest for a little while. Cooler heads prevailed. They decided on the full game suspension, and that's the end of it, as far as I've heard. There was a rumor going around about, you know, some other stuff related to Winston and his woman issues. But I checked with the someone in the state attorney's office. There's been no new allegations there. So as far as,
yeah,
you know,
some of the rumors that were circulating were absurd, you know, ranging from another woman coming forward to, you know, drugs and all sorts of things. It's, you know, this is where social media can get really irresponsible. And none of that turned out to be true in any way. You know, this was the incident that of shouting these obscenities was the sole thing this week, and it should be over at this point, so long as Winston doesn't do anything else that's stupid from here on. And I do think that game suspension will probably have gotten his attention in a way that nothing else would have done so far. So, you know, that's when it comes down to it. You know, I think what happened for the administration is that they determined that they did not want to give Winston the chance to come out and be the hero in the second half. That was the concern, that you suspend the guy and it ends up being about him. And it was about him. He got, you know, he was shown, 48 times on camera over the course of the game, something that Jimbo Fisher actually knew the number, which tells you, you know, how much the Fishers actually do manage to pay attention to what's going on in the media. They're not as sequestered as many coaches are on these things. But the way that basically they determined that they didn't want to put him in a position where Florida State's sputtering, and then all of a sudden he's able to come out, and it ends up being about him, and he looks all the better as a result of the getting suspended for a half. And I think that was the concern more than anything else from what I've gathered. So, you know, it makes sense, but the complaint that I have is that they should have come through. If that was the case, they should have suspended him for the full game on Wednesday. What you can't do is suddenly, you know, doing about fit. You can't do the Roger Goodell. I mean, we can call that from now on. You can't do the Roger Goodell of saying, okay, here's the punishment, and then, well, you know what? Actually, I don't think that's a good punishment. You know what? I think I'm gonna double that.
Especially not at midnight on a Friday night.
No, you can't do that. You can't do that to your team. You can't do that to your coach. You can't do that, you know, to the rest of the people involved in this who work really hard at what they're doing. It, you know, I understand wanting to make sure that Winston has a full game, so that, you know, that's something that in our analysis of this, I had brought up on Noel Digest, that, you know, the concern that I would have is that he could potentially be made into a hero or a martyr or whatever with a half game suspension. That made sense. But in that case, just go with the full game from the beginning, and don't make it look like a clown college. Don't make it look so bad with the about face. And the other thing is that puts the news into the news cycle a third time, which, you know, that's exactly what you don't want to do. I mean, this is mishandling of the media, mishandling of the disciplinary situation, and all of these other things. It doesn't make any sense to me on how that part of it was handled, but, you know, it's Florida State. And at some point, you know, we have to get used to certain kinds of mishandling in these kinds of cases where, you know, hopefully the administration continues to learn from some mistakes and improve on, in that regard. Well, I think we can wrap there. We'll go ahead and we'll have lots more analysis of what actually happened. I'm more interested, and I'm sure the podcast audience is more interested in talking about what happened in terms of the Clemson game than we are in previewing the NC State game. But we'll still do some of that toward the end of the week. But we'll come back with some more analysis tomorrow. But for now, and on behalf of Wayne McGahee and the rest of the Noll Digest crew, I'm Jason Staples. This has been the Unconquered Podcast. Thanks for listening. I made this.